Good day, everybody, and welcome to Special Education Information. My name is Joy. We have our usual guest of JoJo, our African gray female, waiting to be adopted into a forever home, and Sterling, my bird, and they are usually quite vocal and enjoy participating in the conversation. Today, I want to talk about learning styles. It keeps coming up, and so I thought, why not discuss this in more detail? Learning styles is part of learning and knowing how you and other people around you learn. Now, there are five important senses that we usually look at for learning, and that is your taste, your smell, your touch, your hearing, and your vision. Those are the main ones that we hear talked about as we grow older from our younger years, and those are the ones that make more sense to us because that's what we're taught. I have actually, believe it or not, have had a student who did have licking and smelling of everything and ended up with licking and smelling everything as their primary sense for learning. It was a rather interesting case, and what I finally kind of came to a conclusion of is that the child never really left the stage of infancy where a child does do a lot of bringing things to the mouth to figure out what it is through the oral sense and the sense of smell. And so we just set up the child's environment so that they could taste and smell everything that we put in front of them as part of their learning stage, with the idea to graduate them away from that stage and into the next developmental stage of learning. But until that time, we just had a lot of gloves that we wore and a lot of sanitary wipes that we used on his toys. So it is possible to end up with that, although in all the years I've taught, I only ran into it once. In general, with learning senses, there tends to be one that is the overall dominant sense. You can have secondary senses that come up close, but usually the one dominant, so it could be visual or auditory, that really, really is what they tend to focus on the most. And that's something to pay attention to, and we'll go into a little bit later. So most people think you stop at five. Well, there's actually another two that tend to be combined together, but they're two separate senses that most people don't think about too much. And one of them is kinesthetic, and the other one is proprioceptive. Now, as a kinesthetic learner, well, let's stop a second and define kinesthetic. Kinesthetic is relating to a person's awareness of the position and movement of the parts of the body by means of sensory organs or proprioceptors in the muscles and in the joints. They really have a good feel of where they are located in space. And that can be really, really handy for a lot of different reasons. Now, a kinesthetic learner tend to be tactile learners who use movement and testing and trial and error and does best in a non-traditional learning environment to retain and recall their information. They tend to be the go-getters inside of a classroom. They love the experiments. They love getting up and moving around. They love movement and not just sitting at their desk, staring at the board, thinking about 5 million other things. And their bodies just feel this tension that they need to move. And that is where the difficulty comes in when you're teaching students like that, especially when you have them mixed in with a bunch of other kids who tend to have the tendency to learn by just sitting back, relaxing, and being able to just watch what's going on the board. And then you have these kids, and they're the wiggly ones and the tapping ones, and you really have to find ways to handle that, and we can go into that a little later. So if you find in yourself that sitting and just watching makes you feel antsy, makes you want to get up, makes you want to go and do, then you may very well be a kinesthetic proprioceptive learner. And that's something to keep in mind when you're in a classroom. You've got to find ways to keep yourself occupied without being rude to your neighbors or to the teacher, while you're also being able to listen to the lecture that's going on. So what do you do with kids when you get them to college and all of a sudden they're expected to sit still and be quiet and sit there and learn and memorize this stuff when unfortunately it's so very hard because they just don't want to sit still? So one of the things you can do if they're older, and maybe even if they're younger, is teach them to take notes, preferably by hand and not by computer, because then that motion of the arm and the hand that's allowing that feeling of doing something, and even allow some doodling off in the corner of the pages so long as they're paying attention. And that was always my rule with all of my students, with all the accommodations, was if you can't answer the question I just asked, then you're not paying attention and your distraction is coming from your pen or your toy or your whatever, then that toy is no longer welcome to be in your hands. You're not following directions. There are other things that you can do, not in college, but high school or below, are things like rocking stools. Those are really great. You sit on the stool and they can rock around and they don't necessarily fall over. And the kid can just keep moving. And then that allows the kid's body to be moving, which then allows the brain to focus a little bit better. They also have bouncing stools, which are similar and usually made by the same company. But you have to be careful with those because sometimes, especially the younger kids, they get to bouncing and bouncing and bouncing and bouncing. And the next thing you know, they've either broken the stool because they bounced it so high or they've fallen off. So you got to find a balance between what works between the bouncing and balancing them not falling off that stool or distracting the other kids too much. They have rocking cushions. They're like discs and they're certainly slightly swollen and the kids can sit on them. I had one student who liked to put it against his back and he'd kind of bounce off of it. He didn't distract the other students. It didn't bother me, so that was fine. It was a compromise. Those sitting balls, the yoga balls, they were so popular for so long. Those balls worked really, really well with a lot of kids because they could move around and wiggle on them or lay on them. Again, as long as they were paying attention, I didn't care how it was they were doing it, so long as they answered the questions when I asked them. That was always my rule. In one case, I had one child. She was very, very tiny. She was 9 years old, but she only weighed 60 pounds. And yet she was a wiggle worm and she really had a hard time focusing if she didn't have something that kept her body busy. And so I had my aide sit behind her, kind of brace the ball a little bit, and then that allowed her to move around on it and her not fall off. And it actually, that worked out pretty well. There's fidget toys. Fidget toys come in all sizes now, and you can even go to Amazon and type fidget toy and it will come up with tons of different things. And the rule for me for fidget toys was very similar. You can play with a fidget toy, but if I ask you a question and you're unable to answer because you were so focused on that fidget toy goes away for the rest of the period. And maybe you can have it back the following period or maybe not till the end of the day. It sort of depended. But I kept a basket of fidget toys on the corner of my desk and all the kids knew they were welcome to it so long as the question had to be answered if I asked it. I did have one kid. It's kind of a funny story. He had one of the rubber discs that it was blown up and he was throwing it and throwing it. And I kept telling him, stop, put it behind your back or sit on it. If you don't want to do those, put it under the desk. I said, but you can't be throwing it. So he does it one more time. He throws it and it rolls away. And so I told him, I'm like, kid, go over, find where it is, and I want you to sit on it. Wherever it is, I don't care where it is in the classroom, you just sit on it. And he looked at me, he's like, are you serious? And I said, you've had me for almost a year as a teacher. What do you think? And so he knew I was serious, so he got up, and he went and he found it, and he sat on it. But he didn't get my attention anymore, so he laid down on it, thinking, I think that he would get my attention that way, but I didn't. I ignored him because he was still on it and that's what mattered. Well, then my supervisor comes into the room and she has to step over him to get to me to tell me whatever it was that he was, or she was going to tell me. And then I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, my supervisor just walked right over a student laying on the floor in my classroom. And then she left, stepping over him, went out the door and just kept going. Didn't say a word to me. And so as soon as recess started, I scrambled over to my computer and sent her an email. I was like, let me explain why the kid was laying on the floor in the middle of the classroom, in the middle of my lecture period. And she just wrote me back and said, nope, I know you know what you're doing and I trust you. And it was a huge compliment. But oh my gosh, can you imagine that feeling when she first walked in and had to step over that kid laying on the floor? So that kid did not get that particular toy to play with for a week because I was not going to go through that again. Okay, so that's that case with that kid. So you got to watch out for those fidget toys. They're very wonderful, very handy and great, but boy, they can backfire on you. Anyway, so proprioceptive learning. Proprioceptive is also known as kinesthesia, and it's your body's ability to sense movement or action or location. It's present in every muscle movement that you have. It's when you close your eyes and you know how to use your hand to scratch your nose, even though you can't see where your hand is, or how you can take steps and walk forward without having to look down at your feet and watch every single step that you take. And most people have a decent amount of proprioceptive awareness, but there are some who have a very lousy proprioceptive awareness, and they do not do well getting around in the world. They're the ones you see walking into door frames. They're the ones that you see kind of tripping over everything. They just don't feel like they know where they are in space. And then there are people who are very, very, very good at it. I had one young lady. She knew where she was all the time, with or without her cane. It was amazing. I just watch her walk off someplace and she'd maneuver her way around things. And she just seemed to have a good sense of where she was in space. And it was pretty amazing watching her, really. But proprioceptive and kinesthetic all kind of be grouped together because you kind of need both of them to get along well in the world. When you have somebody who has very good sense of proprioceptive awareness and kinesthetic awareness, these are your sports people. They're just graceful. They know where they are in space. They're the ones that can jump up and grab a ball without even looking at it because they just know where it is. So those people have a lot of grace and tend to be our sports people. So next we have touch. There are people who learn a lot by touch, and you have to think about the blind. A lot of people who are blind do a lot of touching to learn about their world, and that includes Braille. Braille is very tactile and very much something that is needed for them to learn to read is using their sense of touch or tactile sense. A lot of people mix up tactile and touch with the proprioceptive. I separate it in my mind by saying touch takes a little less movement, a little less exaggerated reaching for things than proprioceptive does. Proprioceptive to me requires a lot more movement and arms stretching or legs kicking or walking, things like that, whereas tactile tends to be more in front of you and in your hands. That's how I separate it. Some may disagree with that. And then we have hearing. So some people do a lot better listening to lessons than they do watching the lessons. And those people tend to do well if you have them tape record the lessons and then they can go home and listen to them. Some people do well reading their lessons into a tape player and then hearing them later and studying them that way. Some people do much better with books on tape. And thanks to technology, we have come a long, long, long ways in being able to provide so many books on tape, as well as the computer being able to read what is on the screen to somebody who prefers to have a book read to them, which I think is completely awesome. And then there's, of course, people who are visual learners, which I don't know the statistics, and I really wish I did. My guess is that a lot more people rely on their visual sense to learn than they do their auditory or tactile. But auditory is going to be right up there. It's going to be just second of that visual. And for visual learners, things like the slideshows or presentations that people have, and then getting those, what's great is when they pass out those slides and then you can take notes on them at the same time. That's really great for a whole bunch of different types of learners. Taking notes is great because then you can see them visually as you're taking them. Pictures are always great to help reinforce what you're learning. Reading is good. Working on a computer is good. Using highlighters on your books or using 3x5 cards of different colors works really well. And things along those lines that involve the visual sense. Those are very helpful for people who are strong visual learners. Now here's the downside to things. Things that are detrimental to different learning styles. And this is something you have to keep in mind of within the classroom or maybe in presentations as well. But in the classroom, we're going to see it a lot and it's going to be a problem a lot. Auditory learners, they're going to be distracted by somebody tapping a pen, maybe in the seat behind them or even across the room if you're really sensitive. You just, there it is. And that just gets so annoying. You have the noise, maybe someone has a fidget and that fidget is making all kinds of noise as they're going about it. Believe it or not, fluorescent lighting, that's going to bother people who are also visual learners. But fluorescent lighting, if you've never noticed it, go into a classroom or a room that has fluorescent lighting and turn those lights on when you're all by yourself in there and listen. It makes a humming noise, and if you're sensitive auditorily, it will drive you crazy. I guarantee it, because it drives me crazy, and I'm not primarily an auditory learner. The sound of somebody typing on the keyboard if they're taking notes, and or somebody who's getting assistance who's hearing impaired and they're getting the typing for that. Any construction going on outside is going to drive them crazy. Other kids that are outside that are playing or they're working on some kind of project, that's going to drive an auditory learner crazy. And then you have your visual learner, flickering light. Again, those fluorescent lighting, if you're sensitive all to light, those fluorescent lightings, they have a flickering point and you can see it subconsciously almost, and it can give you a headache. And then students playing with a fidget that has a flashing kind of a reflection to it, so it's flashing as it's being moved, or a light, that'll drive you crazy out of the corner of your eye and you just want to take it from the person and put it away or just throw it out the door or something. And then the view of kids playing outside, that's a whole lot more interesting than what's going up on the board, guarantee it, especially math. And they're doing 2 + 3 = 4y equals whichever. And that's going on the board. Or there's these kids outside the door and they're playing or doing reading buddies. That's a whole lot more interesting than something going on the board about math. Videos that are flashing on the screen, if you're using like a Chromebook and you're doing a YouTube lesson on it and it's got those flashing lights on the side for the commercials, that's going to catch your attention so quickly that you're just going to completely ignore what the actual lesson is. Kinesthetic and proprioceptive learners, you feel a tension, a tightness in your body. You just have to move or it hurts. I mean, just literally physically drives you crazy painful. And you want to get up and move around the classroom. But the second you do, the teacher gets upset and sends you back to your seat. And yet you're in pain because you just need to move. And it's such an effort to stay still. And please, teachers, keep that in mind about your proprioceptive kinesthetic learners, because that's really a lot of what might be leading to some temper tantrums. And then through all of that stuff that these kids are having to learn to put up with, they're losing track of your lecture and they're losing track of what they're supposed to be learning. And then they get a test and they do poorly. And it may have nothing to do with their intellect, and it may have nothing to do with them not wanting to learn the lesson, and everything to do with all the different problems that they're trying to deal with while still trying to pay attention to what you're teaching them. Is there an easy answer to all of this? No, there is not, and I wish that there was, but you've got to try and experiment and see if you can find something that is kind of a happy compromise between all of those different things. And I know that the larger your classroom, the more difficult that becomes. And I don't have any easy answers for you, unfortunately. So how do we deal with it as best we can? Well, one way would be to try to figure out how each of your students learn. And yes, that's easier when you have a smaller classroom, and probably next to impossible when you have a larger classroom. But maybe you can borrow someone's aid, and I'll go into more of detail on how to do that in a little while. Once you know how your students learn, maybe you can group them up together or situate them in the classroom environment so that they can be the most successful. And then you can try to include everything you can in the different learning styles as best as you can. I know that lessons and planning them out and carrying through with them is a lot of work, and you can only do so much. But, you know, maybe parts of the lesson can be active and interactive where the kids can get up and move around and do hands-on projects. Perhaps overhead slides for each of them or videos that they watch on their computers. Auditory readings, music, etc. Work with them as teams to include someone from each of the strengths so that they can help support each other with that. Something I found that was incredibly awesome and so useful for my classroom, and I know that it can't be pulled off in all classrooms just because of the numbers, but it was what I called the menu system for assignments. And basically, I would have three or so projects. It would depend on what the current study subject was. But the projects would cover the same basic material, and they would complement each other, the projects would. And so I would have one, two, and three, and they would be worth so many points. And while they would cover the same basic material, the projects were designed to complement each other because at the very end, they would give a presentation about what they had learned. And the way that they got the information that they needed for their project was different in many cases, or shared different because they'd work in groups. And it would either be like the computer, the library, or interview, or something else that they would propose to me for. And so the end of the project, the end result of the project would look different. But because they did presentations at the end of the menu time period where it was due, they still all learned the same information. And the way that it would work was that they would have to earn, say, 8 points. And menu item one would be 3. Menu item 2 would be 2. Menu item 4 would be 8. Menu item 2, I don't know. It would just work out so that they had to pick out the combination of points of the menu items and get those things done and turned in. And sometimes I did let them work individually, but a lot of times they worked as a group so they could get through the information faster, and then they had to put together the project as a group. And it worked really, really well, and I was very impressed with the results that I got out of it. And the kids actually seemed to enjoy it most of the time, because as you know, there is always going to be a combination of students that just do not work well together. It was really eye-opening for me to see which of the students didn't work together well that I assumed would be just fine. So that was an eye-opening lesson time for me to have to teach them how to get along together. That was a good lesson for everybody on that one. So I would give them about 15, 20 minutes, maybe once or twice a week, to work on that project in the classroom. And otherwise, they had to coordinate it between themselves outside of class as part of their homework. And it always related to the theme of the class topic that we were doing. Now, every now and then, I would set aside projects like that, and it would be extra credit for them. So if they knew they weren't doing well in class, they would go over and they would pick out a project from a binder and use that to try to boost their grade up, which it worked out pretty well too. And what's great about it is that it was easy to align to the state standards. And since that's always such a big deal, that was perfect. It just worked out really, really well. And I highly recommend it if you can pull it off. All right, so at this point, you're probably asking yourself, this is a great learning style, all that stuff. How in the world am I supposed to figure that out? It was part of my training for my specialty, but I realized that it was not a training that most teachers got. And I thought, that's kind of too bad. I think everybody should have an idea of how we learn and how our students learn so that we can create a successful environment for all of our learners. So I'm going to kind of give a real basic rundown of how this project works, and it should be at least a place to start. And then you can see if you can figure out your own method that might work for your needs. Okay, so here's the tricky part. You can get some lined paper, and at the end of each line, you're going to write VAT/T/P/K. That's standing for visual, auditory, tactile, smell, taste, proprioceptive, kinesthetic. You're going to leave about 2 inches at the bottom. At the top, you're going to write the date, the time, the activity. This is going to go on for about 15 minutes. You're going to sit where you have a good angle of the student. If the student keeps seeing you and reacting to you, smiling at you, waving at you, those kinds of things, move out of their angle of vision so they can't see that you're watching. But make sure you still have a good ability to see like their face and see where their hands are doing. It's kind of tricky. You'll get the hang of it. Start a timer. You're going to go for 15 to 20 minutes. And then what you're going to do is you're going to write everything the student does on each line, non-judgmental fashion. First line, student scratches the nose. 2, student picks up pencil. 3, student taps the pencil. 4, student chews on the pencil, and so on. And you can do that for 15 minutes. It's really dry, just complete observation. The kid touches their nose. The kid touches their ear. They play with their hair. Just really, really redundant and dry like that. But you need to do it that way. And then as you go, and it's the best as you can, sometimes you have to go back up and think about it. But most of the time, you got to do it as you go. You're going to put a square around the primary sense. So if the kid touches something, you put a square around the tactile letter, the T. And if they do that while they're humming, then you would do the square around the T for tactile, for touching the desk, and then a circle around the A for auditory. And then if you can't really tell which of those two senses are dominant in that particular situation or another one, you circle both of them. Now you're going to do this in 3 separate environments: PE, lunch, classroom. Outside doing a craft project, and the computer lab in the classroom. 3 separate environments that are different enough that they will be using different skill sets with their environment. And 3 different days. I mean, it could be day 1, the kid is very, very tired, didn't sleep well last night. Day 2, the kid didn't get their medicine. So maybe you have to do it more than 3 times. Try not to do more than 4 or 5, or you're going to overwhelm yourself. Okay, so that's the hard part. This works for all kids with all of disabilities. You can usually get something out of it, enough to tell what is going on with the kid. Even if the child is wheelchair bound, but if they have any visual ability, watch their eyes, see what they're looking at. If they have some form of ability to touch their desk with their hands or their cheek or any kind of tactile motion or proprioceptive motion, then that's what you document. Now you're going to miss things from time to time, and that's okay. Just do your best to stay up because you're looking for an overall pattern. So just grab what you got, and then sometimes the kid's doing something so fast that you can just write it down and you don't get that dominant over to the side. But you can really go back and add it in later, but add it in right after you're done doing the observation, or you will never remember which one is which. All right, so now you've got this collection of papers, 3 to 5 probably. What you're going to do is you're going to take those pieces of paper off to an area where you can spread them out, and you're going to write down how many squares for each section, how many squares for tactile, visual, auditory. And then right below that, you're going to write down how many for circles for each of those sections. And you're going to sit and you're look at it, and you're going to see what is more dominant, what has more numbers overall. And that's probably the section that's going to be your primary learning channel. And then you can have another one that might be really, really close, and that's going to be your secondary learning channel. Rarely you'll have a third, but occasionally it's there. But now you at least know about what that child is going to learn the best with, their visual, their auditory, or their tactile senses. Another thing to keep in mind when you're doing it is that it could be that the secondary sense that you get is so close to the primary, as the child is literally flipping back and forth between the two according to the environment that they're in. So pay attention to that as well, which is why I'll flip it over to the back side of the page and write kind of a brief note about what the environment is like. Once you do a few of these, you'll kind of get the hang of it, and then it'll fall into place for you. And then this will be a really great help to know how many visual learners you have in your class and auditory learners and so on. And I think it'll be really helpful when you're doing your lesson plans. And the other great thing is that it applies to you too. It applies to me. It applies to everybody. Learning to know how you learn, isn't that great? Because then we can set up our own environments. And when we go to schools or lectures and things like that, we know how we can set up the environment for us. Some people might look at you a little odd, like, why in the world are they tape recording this lecture? I don't understand. But for us, that might be the best way that we learn to do something. Or maybe we're taking a class in pottery, and maybe we need to be up close because we're more of a visual learner, or maybe we need the teacher to come over and show us directly because we're more of a proprioceptive kinesthetic learner. So there's lots of reasons to have this information and to know it about ourselves. And I think that that is a fantastic way of learning about how to learn. So take it, learn this information about yourself, and then run with it. Well, that's all for now, and I will talk to you next time.